Hello and welcome to the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and we're getting an update today from Mako Mining, traded on the TSXV under the ticker MKO, and on the OTCQX under the ticker MAKOF. And we're speaking today with President and CEO of Mako Mining, Akiba Liesman. Akiba, it's always great getting you on the show to get an update on Mako. Last time we were talking, just a month ago, we were discussing the accretive transaction between Mako Mining and Gold Source Mines in Guyana, traded on the TSX GXS. And we spent a lot of time on that, and we really didn't get to operations. So I'm excited that you had some news out this week dealing with the Q1 operations. We've made a point in prior episodes about how the mine was really up and jamming right along on all cylinders, and that after the little dip in the middle of the year where you had the snafu with the smelter, Q3's production kind of spilled into Q4. And I don't think a lot of people realize just how big the margins are in this mine, even in Q4. But now you followed it up with Q1 of this year with a solid operations report. Give us some of the key metrics and takeaways for investor to consider about how the mining is going in Nicaragua.
Sure. And thanks for having me on again, Shed. Yeah, so 2023 was kind of like a strange year because nothing was actually going particularly wrong operationally. We had about a 4.5 month permit delay. It was kind of like a tactical decision that I made at the end of 2022 to bifurcate some of our permitting that we had as we transitioned from San Albino to doing San Albino and Las Conchitas mining in aggregate. And because of that delay, it led to a bunch of things where the head grades of the deposit went down. We were stripping too much gold from our elution circuit. The deleterious elements were going into our doré. The refinery got upset. And long story short, it wound up being that we, for a period of about 7 weeks, we had a couple of shipments of gold that were delayed from Q3 to Q4. So we published our audited financial results in Q4, and it showed like truly extraordinary numbers that came out from that. So we sold 13,400 ounces of gold in Q4. Now that was flattered by 2,100 ounces of gold that should have been sold in Q3 because this snafu at the refinery that we had that got pushed into Q4. And but on the baseline of what was going on in Q4, everything was running better than it ever has, right? So 11,500 roughly ounces of gold recovered in Q4. And then on the financial results that we put out for the quarter, we generated nearly US $17 million of mine, that's pre-tax, mine operating cash flow. And think about that for a second, is that this was a mine that sold 13,400 ounces of gold. So that's roughly $26 million of revenue at the gold prices that we were experiencing in Q4. And then from that, you were getting US $17 million of pre-tax cash flow. And then think about this, a mining company that reported net income. Oh my God, net income of US $9.5 million. That equated to US 14.5 cents a share for the quarter. Now, we reported roughly US $810 an ounce all-in sustaining costs. And as you were mentioning, there was that 2,100 ounces that flattered some of the financial results from Q4, namely mine operating cash flow, certainly. So from revenue, certainly, but not so much all-in sustaining costs. So that actually didn't have any real impact. So the $812 an ounce that we reported for Q4 was real. So now transition to Q1, where we put out our operating results, our financial results for Q1. We're targeting May 15th, May 16th. Something like that. So in the next, 2.5 weeks, we'll put out the financial results alongside that. But we basically said, look, the mine is still humming along. We recovered almost exactly 10,000 ounces of gold for the quarter. We only sold 9,300 ounces of gold for the quarter. Now, that was not a refinery snafu. That was an Easter Bunny snafu, is that Easter fell on a Sunday. So we lost the production from I shouldn't say lost. We deferred to Q2 the production from that Sunday, the Saturday, the Good Friday. And then because in Nicaragua, things can slow down from a transportation perspective in Holy Week. So we actually sent a shipment out on that that Wednesday prior. So there's probably a good 6 days of production that got deferred into Q2. But leaving that aside, if you actually look at the numbers, and I gave some snippets for the cash flow that was being generated from the mine, is that, look, at the end of the day, our cash balance went up US $3 million, and that's doing a pretty aggressive exploration program, inclusive of acquiring surface rights so we can actually do some expansion preparations for Las Conchitas. And in addition to US $3 million of cash increasing, why not repurchasing through an NCIB a million shares this calendar year at prices of roughly on average Canadian $2.80 a share, substantially below where we're trading at right now. So when we were talking about the Gold Source transaction, and one of the key aspects of this that I do think people need to internalize a little bit is that I've been pretty vocal that Mako lacked certain heuristics for us to be, let's call it, for lack of a better word, attractive to the gold mining specialist community, and almost by extension for other mining companies when we're actually tracking M&A. And the reason why I say that is because we have a relatively complicated ore body, which means when you develop a resource, you really have one of two choices to make. You can either have painstaking levels of detail in how you drill out your deposit and how you map and model and constrain your resource. And by doing that, you make your resource relatively small. And that's the approach that we took. Alternatively, you can just make shit up, right? So, and I do think that especially for narrow vein, high grade deposits, this industry certainly rather chooses the latter than the former. For us, the main difference between, let's say, us and a normal junior is that we actually were planning on mining this. So getting the accurate technical data there, it was not just for us to beat our chest and say, oh, look at how good our data is. But it was really there because we're going to be mining it. So if we actually had some discrepancies between what we're putting out from a technical perspective versus what reality was, it would have been game over for Mako. So it was, we were basically forced to do the former approach on how to develop resources. The punchline to this, though, is that when you have a relatively small resource, it's very difficult to attract, let's say, the specialist universe from investors, but also to engage other mining companies for M&A discussions. It's like, well, I have a resource of X and you have a resource of Y. How did these two companies fit together on the basis of those heuristics? And what I told people about Gold Source is that one of the key aspects of them was in addition to having an asset that fit hand in glove with what we have over at San Albino, but also there's a management team that we have deep-seated relationships with. And the relationships were not there to basically say, all right, Eric, all right, Steve, let's get together so we can have beers together in Nicaragua or Georgetown. It was really there saying, look, guys, if you spend the time to look at what we have, you're going to come to the same conclusion that we came to, which is that San Albino is a special mine that is getting missed by the marketplace. And their response is, all right, let's take a look. So the first phone call that we had to them to discuss the deal, and all of this is going to be laid out in the circular that Gold Source is going to put together, was really in March of 2022. They spent over 2 years taking a look at us, which is really the amount of time that was required for them to get comfortable with what we had over at site. And then when you think about the timing of how the deal was announced, said here, we announced the deal. A couple weeks later, we then announced our audited 2023 results, inclusive of our blowout Q4 quarter. And then a few weeks after that, we had our Q1 production updates with enough snippets on financials that most educated people can really gauge what our income level was for Q1 as well. So this became important is that when Mako announced this deal, there was a lot of shareholders over at Gold Source that said, I don't understand what's going on. Like, I don't like these Mako guys, they have a small resource. I heard this newsletter writer said bad things about them in 2020 or whatever the case may be, whatever the rumor bill was. And they immediately sold their stock to the deal. And from my perspective, that's great. If somebody was unhappy, like sell your stock and put it into the hands of people that actually want it. So even though there's a lot of volume that came out of Gold Source and most of the large shareholders have sold, it went into really, really strong and deep hands that were listening to shows such as yourselves, listening to me over the course of the last 3-4 years, banging the table saying, people are missing the forest through the trees over here. And I think the market is now finally coming to realize that. I think most people, inclusive of my critics, recognize the industrial logic over here, but people are starting to recognize the value proposition of bringing these two companies together to create really a platform for explosive growth going forward as we enter into this new bull market in gold and gold equities.
Well, Akiba, let's dig a little bit deeper into some of the synergies between the two projects. You know, when you think about San Albino, as you've mentioned many times, it's not an easy deposit to either build resources at or show how you're going to mine it, but you've done it successfully as a team now for years. And like you're saying in these operation reports, the proof's now in the pudding. Look at the margins. Look at the generation of net income for the company. It's a rarity in the gold production space. It's a rarity in gold mining stocks just to see companies turning a profit. But it's a complex deposit, to my point. And when you look at Eagle Mountain, it's unique as well in Guyana. And so maybe just speak to when the two teams did have these discussions, when you were looking at the synergies between the two teams, what your operations team can bring to the table in Guyana and how you think you can attack their Eagle Mountain project.
Sure. So, I mean, it's not just our COO, Jesse Munoz, who really has a long-seated relationship with Eric Fuhr, the soon-to-be chairman of Mako. But Jesse also used to own and operate his full-service engineering, procurement, and construction management firm. So he has, in terms of his key guys, there's probably about 17 people that work there in senior management that was part of this cohesive unit that everything from obviously the COO, but our general manager comes from Jesse's group, senior mining engineers come from his group, senior mining geologists come from his group, administration work just to keep everything together. So at the end of the day, the management team over at Gold Source, and I think this is maybe something that shareholders sort of know about, but don't really internalize all that much. Eric is fantastic. He really is one of my favorite executives in the industry, and what he's done over at the Silver Crests. So the second time around as well, for both of them were huge successes. And Steve is an extraordinarily competent CEO and kind of understands what he's doing in terms of how to put businesses together and how to value companies in terms of his background as an equity analyst and metallurgist as well. But it doesn't take two people to build a mine. So it's not just having people that know what they're doing there. It really requires the whole breadth of a team that can bring everything to the table to go and operate and develop these small and medium scale projects, which Jesse and his crew are truly the experts in delivering in terms of being able to be on time and on budget for these types of projects.
Well, I think another thing we should bring up is just the flat out interest in Guyana, not just on the oil side of things like it has been the last decade, but now as far as metals and mining, there's a lot of interest from the politicians, even the president of the country, in developing projects in Guyana. And we just recently saw a big transaction where G Mining Ventures is going to acquire Reunion Gold. And so that's got to be another boon for the whole country. So now this is two acquisitions, including the Mako acquisition of Gold Source. What does that say about the jurisdiction of Guyana?
Oh, it's definitely heating up, right? So, I mean, Guyana, when you look at the map and the closology of this, everybody recognizes that, look, at the end of the day, Guyana and the surrounding greenstone belts and going from Venezuela all the way to French Guyana has basically identical geology to what you experience in West Africa, which is taken out 100 plus million ounces over the decades and centuries in that jurisdiction. Guyana was not nearly as big of a focus just because it's the cover there. It's basically under jungle. So it's very difficult to actually go and do some systematic exploration like you would see in jurisdictions like West Africa. The other knock on Guyana was that, all right, there's a lot of geological prospectivity associated with the country, but the infrastructure was poor. You go down to Georgetown, even though the airport is, 30 miles away or so, I think it took me about an hour and a half to drive back in a taxi. So the roads aren't great, the infrastructures aren't great, but everything is changing. I mean, think about it's basically a miracle that happened over this country. Is here's a country with 760,000 people from a population, and they literally found an asset that's worth $1 trillion offshore in terms of the Stabroek Field. Now, as that relates to us, there's a few tangible benefits that happens when you're going through this miraculous growth that that Guyana is going through. The first is infrastructure is going to take care of itself. You already have these major road projects, and just having access to where we are right now is infinitely better today than it would have been 3 years ago. And it's going to be infinitely better 3 years from now than it is right now, just because of what's going on in terms of reinvesting in capital projects within the country. Then there's like the more subtle aspect of it, which I think is as important, if not more important, is that here you have the resource country that found the resource, and they're trying to avoid the resource curse associated with it. They have a good example of what not to do next door in Venezuela. And one of the ways from a political perspective to make sure that there's going to be continued growth and equitable growth in the country is to make sure that other industries outside of the hydrocarbon aspect are going to be incentivized to get up and running, because the oil fine was really there to have the strategic cash coming into the country. But really, there really isn't all that much, certainly on a dollar of economic value, there really isn't all that much employment that comes from it. The real meat of the employment is kind of what happens within the interior of the country, right? So all of these infrastructure projects that are being built, that requires employment. And then certainly the mining industry within Guyana, whether it's the historical bauxite production, and then now the burgeoning gold development that's going to be happening between us and then other companies. And you mentioned earlier is that there was another announcement on a merger perspective in countries. So the G Mining folks are acquiring Reunion Gold. And by the way, I think that's fantastic. Like I like to try to make analogs in terms of where we are, but and usually some of those analogs can be a little bit dubious. Here's one that I think actually rings true to a certain extent, is that here you have G Mining, who are really run by some of the most competent, what I would call big boy type project developers, with the Gignacs running that company and doing an excellent job. I mean, think about the success that they've had with really their last five or six project developments. So you really can't think of a better operating team. And I like to say, all right, well, our guys are kind of like analogous to that on the small to medium scale side of things. And they're also backed by real capital. So I think the La Mancha folks are fantastic. Here you have an Egyptian billionaire who made his money outside of the gold mining industry and telecommunications, and then he's also had a lot of success in the gold mining space. So it's also analogous to Mako, where we have a billionaire who's the controlling shareholder of Mako, who's and Chuck has made his money in many different industries as well, but has also had a quite a great deal of success in mining and precious metal mining as well. And so I think it's nice to see that these types of assets and people are coming together to develop assets. I think it's great. I think it's probably too strong a word to call it an endorsement, but at least it's got like this analogous stamp of approval in terms of our business model over here. So I think it was fantastic for the G Mining folks, fantastic for Reunion, fantastic for Mako, fantastic for Gold Source, fantastic for Guyana, fantastic for the junior gold market. It's fantastic all around.
Yeah, Kiba, it is fantastic all around. It's great for the sector. It's great for the country and great for the companies operating there. And really, right now, Mako is set up with so many catalysts, it's hard to cover them all in one call. We've talked about the operational success. We've talked about, you know, this transaction, the share buybacks, but we always seem to shortchange the expiration. And I want to give you just a moment to also talk about the expiration catalyst still coming up in Nicaragua and eventually in Guyana.
Yeah, sure. So the company was running all out on exploration in Q3 of 2022. So we were drilling with seven core rigs, and our peak spend for that quarter was running just under US $4 million for the quarter. So figure about like a US $15.5 million run rate. And then that was basically a sufficient level of exploration that we would have been able to get onto a path where we would expand production from, we have a notional 500 ton per day facility, but we're operating at 600 tons a day right now, so 20% above capacity. But the ability to get this up to 1,000 tons a day was really constrained by how much drilling and exploration we were going to do. After the sanctions news came out in early Q4 of 2022, we decided to down throttle our exploration just to make sure that we were certainly drilling within our capacity to fund it. And then certainly going through that that 4.5 month permit delay that spoke about in 2023, it was also kind of essential to make sure that we kind of retrenched a little bit and got us through the trough. And then when things turned on, we would then turn back on the expiration when we had the capital to do that. So starting really almost immediately after we started to mine Las Conchitas, so this is in the August timeframe of last year, we decided to ramp back up our exploration spend, but do it smarter. So really our approach right now is instead of drilling with seven core rigs, we were going to be ramping up and drilling with 4 RC rigs and 3 additional core rigs. So right now we have 4 RC rigs on site, and we also have right now 1 core rig, which is there for underground geotechnical perspective at the moment. And that was a pretty substantial ramp up from where we were, let's say, at the beginning of Q3 or late Q3 of last year. So to put this in context, we're going to get a very similar amount of data from this program of the RC and core mixture than we were back in 2022. But instead of spending kind of like $15.5 million a year, the real budget right now is maybe just over 10. So there's going to be a pretty substantial level of savings, even though there's going to be a similar level of data that we were getting before, because we're more familiar with the asset. We kind of know how to deal with some of the constraints that RC data is going to be providing the company. So for investors that are champing at the bit for exploration results, because they're really like reading these news releases, we needed to focus on the mine, right? So we put out an updated resource, which included Las Conchitas in November of last year. So really all of the drilling, not all of it, but probably about 90% of the drilling since August last year to maybe the end of March was focused on infill work to make sure that we had our intermediate term mine plan, especially for the open pit, kind of tucked together to make sure that we actually have the ability to sustain our operations for the foreseeable future. And then starting really at the beginning of April, we started to step out. So for those expecting news releases on our exploration results, I apologize for that, but we'll put out important data as opposed to kind of like fluffy infill work. So that's still going to take some time before we get like a critical mass of drill results. But investors should expect that to happen, what is it, the end of April right now? So probably in the early part of June, we'll put out our first exploration results for the new large-scale exploration program, that $10.5 million budget that I was speaking about just now.
All right, well, we'll wrap it up there, but we'll definitely keep following along with the drill results when they come back out with you. And then when you get the financial results out in a couple of weeks, maybe we'll get back together again, Akiba. There's so much on the go with Mako Mining that if people want to follow along with the news flow, definitely click on the link below this interview. It takes you over to the company website to the news section. Akiba, keep us abreast as more news comes out. We'll get you back on for an update, and looking forward to our next conversation.
All right. Sounds great, Chad.